The Ira Kaufman Podcast is presented by Bill Curry Ford. Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. Curry is the family name, 65 years family owned in Tampa. They are one of a kind. The giant is back. Nationwide lifetime warranty on all new vehicles. Check it out now. BillCurryFord.com.
Can you get me some damn guys up front that can block for the run besides just being decent on pass protection? Can they move some people? Can I get some earth movers up front?
Sage likes protection, and at home, Ira, you've got to call Florida's Elite Restoration when you have a disaster at your property, fire, flood, mold, storm damage, whatever it is. You call them first. We emphasize first. Before you call your insurance company, Florida's Elite Restoration will come to your home with the latest technology or your business property and evaluate all the damage immediately, and they can work with you, with your insurance company, to get the money you deserve that you're already paying for so you don't get ripped off, to restore your property properly. They are experts in this. Check them out. Check out their reviews. Sean Sullivan of Bill Curry Ford has used them, thinks they're fantastic. We know them. Florida's Elite Restoration. Get there now. Floridaselite Restoration.com, so you have a plan when disaster strikes. And when you do call, mention Ira Kaufman or Joe Bucks Fan, and you'll get $500 back. If you need their services after the free evaluation, you'll get that money to put toward your deductible or just to make your repairs. FloridasEliteRestoration.com.
He was in, he was out, almost before he could get a cup of coffee.
Buccaneers fans, here he is, Ira Kaufman, the sage of Tampa Bay sports, the baron of Big Storm Beer, Mr. Bill Curry Ford himself, the king of Newport Richie, Uncle Ira, the custodian of Canton. And we have got a podcast for you today. I'm Steve Isbitz of JoeBucksFan.com. Lee DeKemper of JoeBucksFan is here. If you've missed past episodes, find them at JoeBucksFan.com, Apple Podcasts, Podbean, Podcast Addict. There's many places to find the sage online. And of course, when he's not home and when he's not at One Buck and when he's not at the local buffet, Ira is at Bill Curry Ford getting his vehicle serviced, washed, walking around, talking to people. It's like his second home, Bill Curry Ford. They're family owned. They love Ira like family. They love JoeBucksFan.com like family. And we reciprocate that love, Ira. Bill Curry Ford, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium, 65 years in business. They've got the tax match going on right now. They're going to match your deposit on your vehicle. It's a real thing. You can find it out at BillCurryFord.com. The service bay there is the largest in the country, says GM Sean Sullivan, the guru over at Bill Curry Ford. He'll help you personally if you want, but they've got great deals on vehicles. There are specials online. Get to BillCurryFord.com. Always ask Sean for the Ira Kaufman discount, which is some good money in your pocket. Sage, I know you love Bill Curry Ford. We all do. We all have our vehicles from them. I, on the other hand, never have to get service because I've never had a problem with my vehicle in 6 years now. It's unreal. Bill Curry Ford, great used selection. They'll come out to your property for service, and or they'll just do mobile service if you have a recall. They're doing everything right now.
Last time I went into Bill Curry, they said there's a recall coming up. And Steve, I can't believe you just said it, because that would be a beautiful thing. Have somebody come out and handle a recall at my home. I mean, that is a fantastic service. And we were just talking to Lee before the podcast, and we just went in for an oil change. He was talking about how, man, they are so efficient there now after the remodel. He was in, he was out, almost before he could get a cup of coffee inside the showroom. So they're doing some great things over at Bill Curry Ford. And Steve, I want to kick off this podcast by saying I got to give some kudos to Sean Sullivan. This guy studies like nobody's business. He watches film, I believe, like pro and college scouts do. And this latest one on the running backs, you know, and we haven't talked too much about the Bucs draft and a running back. Sean's, you know, he's into the styles of the running backs and who can make a jump cut and what kind of hands they have and the speed and the burst. It's very, very detailed. So I got to give Sean Sullivan credit, and there's more to come before the draft.
Well, Ira, I got to explain what you're talking about. The Best in Class podcast is at JoeBucksFan.com, Apple Podcasts. That is JoeBucksFan.com draft guru Sean Sullivan doing his thing like he's done for several years. But you can correct me if I'm wrong, Ira. This is the first time you've actually listened to the podcast cover to cover. and you were blown away by the recent running back breakdown. It was excellent. I would suggest everyone listen to it.
And he also addressed Steve. I'll mention it because you might not mention it, Steve, but he also came to my defense about Brock Bowers and a little bit about Michael Penix. So, Lee, maybe I'm not crazy. If Sean Sullivan agrees with me, that gives me a little comfort. Lee, I'm not comparing Bowers to Travis Kelce necessarily, but I think he's going to be a very, very good pro. And, Lee, if you go in with the 26th pick and you walk out and, if you have to use an extra third-round pick that you have, so be it. You walk out of the first round when you ostensibly sit in 26 and you walk out with a top-10 talent, that's a home run, Lee. That's a home run. Yeah.
Of course, you don't want to fall into the trap, but, they thought he had a home run with O.J. Howard. That was disaster. I'll just say right there, disaster.
I got a good story about that. So I'm out at $1 that night, when the Cubs drafted O.J. Howard. And, of course, I made my voice quite clear for about 2 months prior to that draft that I wanted Dalvin Cook. Bucks needed the running back. I wanted Dalvin Cook. I didn't think they were going to draft him in the first round, but, hey, you can always dream. Like, some people dream about Kate Upton. I dream about Dalvin Cook. And a member of the Bucks organization got a hold of me the next day, and he said, "You look like someone wanted to shoot your dog," because I was so bummed out that they picked O.J. out. Not that I said anything, so they told me. This person told me.
Well, at least 7 or 8 years later, you look like a genius, Lee.
All right, Ira. Yeah, Sean defended you to the fans. Everybody can listen to that little rant, but it's really a breakdown of the running backs. That's what the meat and potatoes is of the Best in Class podcast. Now, Ira, we talk about a lot what we want for the Bucks with the draft, what the Bucks should do, what they might do, what we think they need to do, all this other stuff. However, I kind of want to dial in tonight on where you think the mind of the organization is, because I don't want fans to get confused, when those lines cross. And I want to stick to that, because ultimately what the Bucks think of their needs and their team drives the draft. So I think we need to just dial in on that, and we can do it for the next bunch of minutes here. So Sage, you want me to start with my question on defense, or you want me to start on offense?
Defense.
All right. Do you believe that Todd Bowles believes that he has a secondary right now that could win a Super Bowl with the five guys that they have back there, obviously assuming that Christian Isian is going to return as the nickelback? They seem to like him. They said he hit a rookie wall, came back. But the two very experienced safeties with Super Bowl rings, Jamel Dean with his ring as the number one corner, and McCollum and Isian. Do you think Bowles looks at it as like, we're good at secondary. We don't need a premium pick there.
I think he feels very good about the secondary. He didn't want to see Whitehead go. The Bucks were in a money crunch. Somebody had to go. It was Whitehead. Somebody from the organization told the three of us it was a mistake. So that's how much they think of Whitehead. They're thrilled to have him back. I don't know what the heck the Jets are doing, but that's why the Jets are the Jets, Lee. Terrible organization. That owner is awful. Anyway, I think Bowles feels very good about this secondary. I think he might feel that he has the best safety tandem in the NFL, and I'm not sure he's wrong. Should those two guys stay healthy? We know about Winfield, and we were around long enough to appreciate Whitehead. He's got a knack for the football, and when he's around it, he grabs it. I think he had 4 interceptions last year. Now, that would have led the Bucs. Helps out in run defense. So, to answer Steve's question, from my point of view, Lee, I think Bowles feels good, even with the departure of Carlton Davis, who couldn't stay healthy. I think he feels good, and Steve didn't mention the kid they got from the Jets, who Steve's very high on. So add him to the mix, and I think Bowles is happy right now.
Lee, what do you think?
We're asking the guests here what the Bucks might be thinking, and they're good at playing poker. I guess I'd have to agree with you, but it's like playing the lottery here. I really don't. We'll find out how confident he is in his cornerbacks when the draft is over with. What I think, what Bowles thinks, are probably two very different things. So I don't know what to say, to be honest with you. I really don't.
Maybe, Stevie, you'd like more competition at nickelback. I could see that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know what Lee's saying, but we spend our days analyzing what these guys say versus what what they're saying versus what they're meaning. I believe, Ira, that all the love that's been shown to Zion McCollum last year, Ball's talking about his incredible improvement, and the fact that McCollum, no matter what you think of him as a player, he is an elite athlete. You're not going to find, and I remember the data at the combine, you're not going to find a guy, even in the first round this year, who's a better athlete. So I think that if they feel that they've developed him enough where they trust him to be a starter, I think Bowles is happy in his defensive backfield, which leads me to believe they're not going to touch that early because they want to play his guys.
Now, Steve, this leads me, I'm glad you mentioned this particular point about, well, what is really the thinking at One Buck Place? Hard to discern, Lee. We got Jason Light on Thursday. Lee, we're not going to glean much from that. We know that already. We tried to twist them into a pretzel many years with these pre-draft previews, and we've gotten nowhere. We know less about it when the 20 minutes is up than we knew before he sat down at the podium sometimes, Lee. But, Lee, you're not going to like this very much, but along the lines of what Steve presented about the secondary, Lee, I'm not sure within the bowels of One Buck Place that they are terrified about the pass rush situation. I'm not sure they buy this, Lee, like you and I do about production. Now, look, I'm looking at it most a little bit from a Jason Light point of view, Steve. He's looking at Shoyinka. I don't think Jason Light's giving up on him. He's looking at Logan Hall. I don't think Light's giving up on him. They think the light's going to go on for these guys. They like some of these other younger guys who have, you know, basically not played at the pro level. You know, they've got some pieces. They think Kalijah Kansey's going to take a step up. That'll help the pass rush. So, Steve, and Lee, I can't believe Lee agrees with me begrudgingly because we can't believe it, but Steve, there could be a feeling inside that building that I think our pass rush is going to be just fine. I don't necessarily share that, Steve.
So I agree with you on two levels, Ira. One, let's look at the facts. When has Jason Light really valued a pass rush? Really valued? I mean, like, you know, I'm going to keep drafting a freaking edge rusher until I get one.
Right.
He's never, and I will contend that, and I always bring this up because it's so vivid in my memory, I can see it right now. Dirk Cutter was maybe 3 or 4 feet from me at the combine, sitting at a round table, and I asked him about the pass rush. They had none, and I think they had like 24 sacks, if it was. I can't recall, but it was something just really, really grotesquely pathetic. And I asked Cutter a question about the pass rush, and Cutter glared at me and almost yelled at me, "We have to have more than 24 sacks." I mean, he just jumped out of his chair. A couple months later, they go out and get JPP. I'm starting to think that Cutter squeezed Light big time. "Would you go out and get me a stinking pass rusher?" He capitulated. Look what happened. People will bring up Shaq Barrett. I'll just quote Todd Bowles on Shaq Barrett. "If we thought he was going to be what he turned in to be, we wouldn't have him. Because they got him off the scrap heap, basically. No one expected him to turn out that way." And so I don't think, and if you really study it, Light comes from the Belichick school. And Belichick has never really put a major value on pass rushing. So unfortunately, I just don't think the Bucs organization values the pass rush, even though the evidence is over the top overwhelming that you get sacks, you win games, if not championships.
Now, Lee, having said that, Steve, the Bucks sack numbers.
I know. They get nothing up on freaking edge.
They've been incredibly consistent since Bowles came to town. Steve, what do you think? You think they share our concerns about the lack of a premier pass rusher?
Well, I think there's a lot of gray area. I just don't believe that they sit around and really think the light, as you called it, is going to go on for Joe Tryon Shoyinka, that all of a sudden Anthony Nelson's going to be a true threatening pass rusher, and Marquise Watts is so good he can't get on the field, and Jose, I forgot his name, is...
Ramirez. Torres. He can't even get on a 53.
You know, he's scaring people in practice so much he can't play. I don't know. I think they know, especially after all those years of watching Shaq and JPP and had that great three-year run that they had together. And they invested money. I mean, Light paid that position big time. Shaq got the franchise tag, and then he got the huge contract. JPP came with a huge contract. So, I mean, they've invested there, and they've been successful. But it does make you wonder why they're sticking with Joe Tryon-Shoyinka. But what I do think, Ira, and I wrote about this earlier in the week, you know, Yaya Diaby was taken in the third round. And about five picks before him, there was a third-round small school pass rusher taken by the Rams. And he was the top sack guy for rookie edge rushers. And you know how the NFL is. You know, it's a league of trends, and everybody's looking for the next value play. And maybe Light thinks, you know what? These pass rushers, you never know if they're going to pan out. Give me the most athletic guy, hardest worker in the third round, and we'll try to coach him up and see if we can get the next Diaby. I think they might think something wacky like that. I don't know. But if they don't draft an edge rusher early, I'm going to, like Lee says, the answer will be right there.
That's a strong point, Steve, in terms of Lee. When you got a Todd Bowles, you know, and let's give him his credit. I mean, you know, even when we questioned whether Bowles was going to be a successful head coach, nobody ever questioned him as a D coordinator, Lee. No, nobody. And why would you?
Well, there's a lot of people out there that do, unfortunately. People are still bellyaching about Cooper Kupp.
They got to get over it, Lee. I mean, the Rams had a hell of a team. I mean, they did. They won a Super Bowl. What are you going to do? They had a hell of a team. The Rams were a better team that day. The Bucs were lucky to be that close. They were. Yeah. So you could look at it that way. But, Lee, you think there's anything to the sort of notion that, you know, Bowles is so good molding these guys, like a Shaq Barrett, who hadn't done much till Bowles got his mitts on him. Look what he did with Diaby. Now, he hasn't been able to unlock Shoyinka. He hasn't. But, Lee, you think there's some of that, like, hey, like Steve says, let's get an athlete in here, you know, maybe in the third round, and let Bowles do his magic. I mean, there might be some of that thought going on at $1.
I don't think there's a question about it. I think it's pretty obvious to me.
Yeah, Sage, the name I was fishing for before, Byron Young, who had those eight sacks for the Rams off the edge as a rookie, he was a day one starter, unlike Diaby, who they waited on. This guy Young comes in, has 19 quarterback hits, but he hit a rookie wall. And, you know, that's obviously very, very common. You know, maybe they think that, hey, you know, the two top sack guys weren't in the first round and we've failed like a lot of other teams. And I don't know. Now, linebacker, this I think is very much overlooked. At inside linebacker, look, Levante David, we'd be lucky if he has two more years, right?
Yep.
You know, good chance this is his last year. He's an iconic player, a damn good player, and they just lost a superior talent who did contribute. He just wasn't anywhere playing up to his ability. So do you think, Ira, is it obvious in front of our face that the Bucs know they have a need at inside linebacker and know that they likely will have a huge need next year and that they want to upgrade the talent level there, where right now they've got Servasio Dennis and KJ Britt, who I believe were both fifth-round picks. Ultimately, that speaks to talent level. Do the Bucs believe they have a need right now in 2 weeks at inside linebacker?
Yes. Yes, they do. And part of your job, you know, and Jason Light takes it very seriously, Lee, part of his job is to look long range, and I'm not talking about 9 years from now. I'm talking about 2 years from now, and that's part of the whole plan. You know, they got the board up with the roster. On the depth chart, you know, they project out 2 or 3 years. That's what teams do. We don't know a lot about Dennis. We don't. What do we know about Britt? He seems to be a pretty good run stuffer. I think he's a minimal factor as a blitzer. I'm not sure about him in coverage. All these things that Levante David does in his sleep. So they're going to miss him. And like Steve said, how long can they count on him realistically? So I think inside linebacker, when we talk about what do the Bucs really think, the decision makers, what do they think? Never mind what we think. I think going forward, I think they're looking hard at inside linebacker, and I think they should be.
What's the thinnest position on the Bucs right now? I would argue inside linebacker.
could be running back. Could be. You know, maybe.
Yeah, I would argue running
back.
You
got a basically unproven guy, for the most part, at Britt.
Right.
You got a 34, 35-year-old linebacker. To this day, every time I have to put Lavonnie David's age in a story, I got to look it up. For whatever reason, I just do not remember. I know he's either 34 or 35. You got basically a largely unproven guy on one side. The other side, you got a middle 30s guy. That's thin.
Yeah,
that's thin.
It's thin. And boy, will they miss Lavonnie David, Steve, when he's gone. They will really miss him.
And real quick about this, Dennis.
Yeah.
Talk about unknown. I mean, and I'm trying to give Jason Light credit when I say this. I really am, sincerely. Of all the rookies they kept, he's the only guy who had zero impact.
You're right. We don't know much about him.
He blew out a hamstring in a worthless preseason game, and ever since then, it was like the wide receiver they just let go. Guy from Atlanta had the hamstring from hell. Never could recover for it. Same thing.
Steve, we don't know that Dennis isn't going to be a good player, but that's the point. We don't know.
It could be just staring us in the face that they're looking at a inside linebacker in the second round that they'd be more than tickled to work in and hope he can start. If not, you know, they'll maybe rotate him with what they got and set him up to replace Lavonnie David. It may just be sitting there that no one wants to talk about it.
Absolutely.
What do you got on the other side of the ball, Stevie?
Well, I guess the last thing I would ask you, Ira, is as crazy as it sounds, but the interior defensive line, you know, Vita Vea turns 29. He is 29. He's 29 this season, and he doesn't play a ton of snaps. Kalijah Kancey is the real deal as a young guy coming up. They got everything they could have wanted out of him as a rookie, and they got Greg Gaines rotating in, so they're fine. But looking at the future and how important Bowles puts that position, do you think they're looking at these guys saying, hey, look, if we think we got a stud that fell to us at defensive tackle and there are some good ones in this draft, at least two, do you think they could possibly go there and say, hey, fans won't like it, but we'll take it?
And it seems to me more of a third-day selection, fourth round, fifth round. That's what it feels like to me in terms of the D tackles. Now, you're right. Vita Vea's got some tread on the tires, Lee, but they don't overwork them. They don't, and we've complained about that. Give him 65% of the snaps, they don't. So maybe that'll prolong his career. Lee, that could be a side benefit of it. They just used a first-round pick on a defensive tackle, and it looks like the guy's going to be a really good player. So to me, it looks like if there's an interior defensive lineman that Light's high on, that Bowles signs off on, to me, it looks more like a third-day selection.
Yeah, because if you think about it, you only have, what, four picks in the first 2 days? So, yeah, you know, my math tells you it's going to be a third day, unless it's priority. I don't know if it's going to be priority. But Steve makes a good point. Via's getting up there, and, you know, those guys take a beating. So it's kind of interesting. I tell you what, the more advanced stats I see on Kancey, I think that dude just scraped the surface. I think this guy is going to be a hellacious player. I really do.
He's light, but boy,
I tell you what, his deep run defense stats will blow your mind. It is not a weakness. This guy is going to be, I believe, a hellacious player.
I think he's going to rack up a bunch of tackles for loss, Steve, if he stays healthy.
Started that, yeah.
Yeah, look, a lot of it depends on who he's playing next to. And look, he had a great rookie season. Considering the late start, they got to be out of their minds happy with what he delivered. But you asked about the other side of the ball, Ira. I wrote something earlier today. How much do the Bucs want to improve their running game? And I think this is the biggest mystery in the draft to me, because nobody really knows the truth, right? You got Liam Cohen coming in here. Nobody knows what he really wants. Todd Bowles, everybody knows, wants to run the ball. And they did say at the combine they want to get bigger up front. Rashad White is on the radio talking about, bring in running back competition. It sounded as if Jason Light said, hey, Rashad, you know, just so you know, we're planning to bring in a running back. You know, we got to juice up the room. And the way he talked about it, but nobody really knows for sure because, you know, they had the back-to-back worst yards per carry in the NFL, and yet they finished the season 6-2, and the running game was a little bit better, and the offense was better, and Do you think they believe they have to fix the running game, Ira, as in get a running back, get an offensive lineman, and that's how you improve? Or do you think they're just kind of cool with the way the offense is and they might look more toward a receiver and a tight end?
Well, I don't think they're cool at all, Lee. And Lee puts his finger on it. And, you know, I don't always agree with Lee on this point about the running game. Lee looks at it more like, I'm not sure White's hitting the right holes and reading the play, and he's patient. And I look at it more like, you know, I don't think they're generating a lot of power at the point of attack from the offensive line standpoint. Even Worf's can do better as a run blocker. He's got room to grow. Lee, whichever side of, or combination, or whatever the reason, Lee, it's not working. And I think it's had a lot to do with the offense struggling. 18 points a game. Brady's last year, 20 points a game. Lee, that's not a good number. 20 points in today's NFL, that's not a good number. It's not. And Mayfield took every freaking snap. It's not like Kyle Trask was in there. So, and they had two good receivers who stayed healthy. Lee, I think a better running game would really help the play action of Mayfield. So I think the conversation is the conversation that Lee talks about on this podcast. Where is the problem? Are there holes there? Or maybe Rashad White's part of the problem as a running back? The guy is a wonderful target. And by the way, I forgot to mention this last week when I was talking about yards after catch is not a strength of the Bucs, and I talked about Godwin.
No.
But I forgot to mention Rashad White is fantastic at yards after the catch. Fantastic. He's almost the best in the league. So that's why I brought up Brock Bowers. But I forgot to mention White. He's so good in that area. But Lee, he's got a lot to prove with the football in his hands going up the middle. I don't see it. And I'm not sure. Like Steve said, it got a little better at the end. But I don't know if he can average 4.2 yards. I don't know if he can do it.
You touched upon it, but you dodged it, and you ran another 5 yards. You know, what I'm about to ask you is not meant to be a criticism of Dave Canales, per se. Was Rashad White misused? And what I mean by that is, Canales tried to use him as a power back. I don't think he's a power back.
Yeah.
Hey, Ira, you had Ira, real quick, you had someone tell you, point blank, saying, hey, look, We don't have that outside guy. Pick a name. We don't have that dude who can turn the corner and have the juice. Isn't that right?
Yeah. I think they mentioned Jamar Gibbs like in that regard. They don't have it. Yeah.
Well, and I disagree that Rashad White has a lot to prove. I think he's already proven it. Right? He's had 2 years to hammer away, and he's just not that guy. That's what really at the core of what I'm asking you, Ira. Do you think the Bucs look at Rashad White as the running back and the running game they crave and say, you know what, we need a guy who can compete with him or outplay him at running back, and we need to get a little more beef on the line, like Bowles mentioned, and fix the running game, get it up to number 20, you know, and keep maybe 15th in the league, keep the defense off the field a little bit, you know, set Baker up for more success. Do you think it's their top priority? Where do you think it sits in their priority?
Hey, you make a strong point, Steve. White's had 2 years. He's got a lot of carries in those 2 years. He's great at catching a football and making the first guy miss. I have no questions about White in that regard. That's a home run for Jason Light. But Lee, running backs run the football, and I'm not sure he's the guy. I'm not sure he's the guy, and I don't think at this point the answer's on the roster to give somebody 12 or 14 carries. And use White, you know, more extensively as a target. And, you know, if White bristles at it, so be it. But 3.4 yards ain't going to cut it. Lee, it's not going to cut it. And I'd like to see somebody else get a chance. And you mentioned Canales. Lee, it's a fair point. He did some good things with this offense, but he was not very imaginative in the ground game. He kept running White between the tackles. Why? Lee, why?
Early last year, I think it was in training camp, he explained it. He says his experience, you run outside, if you have success, it's really hit or miss. It's not consistent. He said if you're a good running team, you're consistent running between the tackles. And that was his philosophy, that running outside is a flip of the coin. But he was looking for consistency. You wear out the defense, you impose your will. And right. He said to do that, you've got to run between the tackles. That's how you become a consistently good running team, is running between the tackles. So he explained it early on last year.
Steve, it sounds like I should have had a talk with Canales on August 5th last year and remind him that he doesn't have Marshawn Lynch or Kenneth Walker III on this roster.
Yeah, but Ira, you've got Bruce Arians and Tom Moore and other people who have said publicly that Rashad White's the next Edgerrin James. So, I mean, and the GM wants him to run his running back. And White was obviously the go-to guy. They didn't bring in any competition for him. So what else was he supposed to do? Like, everyone and their brothers telling me this guy can do it. And I got nothing else. Keyshawn Vaughn sucks. Sean Tucker's terrible. Chase Edmonds has got some juice, but now he's hurt in week 3. So, I mean, it's a challenge there. I just, I really believe that if Todd Bowles is who he says he is, unless he's changed, man, they have to be priority one to fix that running game. It just seems to add up to me, but I don't know, Ira.
You're not wrong, Steve, but they don't necessarily have to do it through the draft, Lee, because Lee knows as well as anybody, towards the end of August, early September, teams do that final cut down. Lee, there's always a couple of running backs that get shaken loose.
Yeah.
Always. Maybe they're making too much money. I mean,
yeah, but if you're serious,
they got to add some bodies to that running back room. They have to.
Yeah, but Ira, if you're serious, you can't wait till August to try to fix this thing. If you really believe it's a priority, but I guess, we're going to find out. What about receiver, Ira? The Buccaneers, I did the research. They're the only team that has not taken a receiver with a top 3 pick in the last 7 years. So 2018, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, that's 6 years that the Bucs have not used a pick on a receiver with one of their top 3 selections in a given draft. There's no other club like that. Obviously, that happened because they got Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, but that doesn't last forever. Trey Palmer, I don't think the Bucs think his ceiling is beyond a number 3. Maybe you disagree, but where do you think the organization stands in the big picture of receiver, which is, of course, tremendously important in 2024?
Well, I look at it a little bit, Steve, like I looked at the inside linebacker spot. Looking ahead, Lee, is Godwin going to get another contract? Maybe, maybe not. How many more years is Evans going to play? We don't know. Trey Palmer, I think, got some potential as a 3, Lee. I'm not sure I'd be comfortable with him being a 1 or a 1A at this point. So looking down the road, Lee, receiver is a position of need, but not immediately, Lee. Not immediately. For instance, if they take a receiver in the 3rd round, Lee, there's no guarantee the guy's going to get a lot of snaps. He's going to have to beat out Palmer as that 3rd guy, certainly not beating out the top 2 guys. So it's not pressing, Lee. It's not immediate. But to Steve's point, you got to take care of it, looking down the road. And the road comes pretty fast in this league, Lee, fast.
I saw a graphic, one of the stat geeks came out, and he had the last time a team drafted a position with the 1st or 2nd round pick. For example, would have the Buck. Last time the Bucks picked the defensive tackle in the 1st or 2nd round would have been last year. Can't see.
Right.
So the last time, and this sort of reinforces what Steve said, but with a little more emphasis, the last time the Bucks drafted a wide receiver in the 1st or 2nd round was 10 years ago. Mike Evans.
Wow.
Ever since then, Light has spent at least 1 draft pick, 1st or 2nd round, on every position since then. At least 1. And I think it's fair to say Evans is in his 30s. He's got a 2-year contract. I think it's safe to say he'll be here 2 years. We don't know if he's still going to be top shelf or not. So, as you stated earlier, Ira, 2 areas that I think are sort of sleepers where the Bucs will spend a high draft pick is wide receiver and inside linebacker, maybe more so inside linebacker. And here's something about Trey Palmer. Next Gen Stats You can't argue with next gen stats because that's data coming from the players. Guess who was the quickest receiver into his routes? Off the ball, off the line of scrimmage, who's the quickest receiver in his routes? Like the first 5 yards, who's the quickest receiver in the NFL?
Don't tell me it's Trey Palmer.
Absolutely is. Now, I'm going to take it a step further. If a guy is that quick coming off the ball, isn't it fair to reason that he ought to be open right away? You see where I'm going with this? With that guy's speed, I would hit him with slant passes until someone could stop it.
Yeah, I see what you mean, Lee.
I'm not pitching to McCanellis here. McCanellis and the Bucks, they used him more to take the top off the field. And I get that with his speed. But if he's that quick coming off the ball, I'd get that son of a gun the ball right away.
I hear you, Lee.
If he really is that quick off the ball, we know how quick he is, you know, just sheer running. I'd get that guy the ball and let his wheels take over. I really would.
Sage, wheels taking over. That reminds me of buying a Bill Curry Ford F-150. A used vehicle, whatever it is, Bill Curry Ford has them for sale. BillCurryFord.com, family owned. That's the family name, Curry, C-U-R-R-I-E. Ask for the Ira Kaufman discount. Nationwide lifetime warranty on all new vehicles, BillCurryFord.com. Ira, the big question, I'm just going to let you roll with it. I want you to think about this. How do you feel the organization, Jason Light? Obviously, we don't know what Liam Cohen thinks in his new offensive line coach, but Jason Light calls the shots with his baby, his offensive line. How does Light feel about this line right here today? He added the starter from the Giants, Ben Bredesen, Opita from the Eagles, who's got experience. These are young veterans. Where does Light stand on the line?
I think Light stands with Todd Bowles, and by that I mean Todd Bowles standing in Jason Light's office, leaning across his desk, and Light looking up and says, what's on your mind, Todd? And Todd looking at Jason Light saying, can you get me some damn guys up front that can block for the run besides just being decent on pass protection? Can they move some people? Can I get some earth movers up front? We face teams that have that, like Detroit. Look at Detroit's offensive line. They push the Bucks around. It's a really good offensive line. When the Eagles made the Super Bowl the year before, they had a fantastic offensive line. The Bucks don't have it. They got worse. It's a hell of a start, Lee. It's a hell of a start. They need more. I think their tackles are okay. I don't know about the depth of tackle, but the starting tackles are okay. I don't think Bowles is happy with the interior of that offensive line. I think he's going to, as he should, have a lot of influence with Light, who might want to stick with Hainsey, might look at Bredesen and say, hey, we got you some help here, Todd. Lee, you don't want an offensive lineman in the first round. I'm not saying they will, but somewhere in the first 2 days, which right now they got 4 picks, somewhere in there, Lee, they got to take somebody.
I'm not saying they shouldn't. I just, you know, first round, you want a guy that makes plays with the ball in his hands or a tackle. And I'll say it. People argue with me. I've never, so if someone's seen this, please point it out. Never have I seen a center or a guard make a play 2 minutes down. You got to have a touchdown. Never. Unless you're talking about a center falling on the fumble in the end zone. I've never seen it. Never.
Don't devalue the center position, Lee.
I'm not devaluing the center position. I'm talking about playmakers, guys that make plays. You get the ball in their hands. I don't care if it's a cornerback. I don't care if it's a safety, linebacker, pass rusher, everything but a guard or a center. You don't waste a first-round pick on a guard and a center, especially when the evidence is clear. Your best centers are drafted third round or later. God help me. I'm using evidence as a point of an argument.
Sage, the irony, part of the irony of this interplay with you and Lee is you mentioned the Lions, and they've got a three-time Pro Bowl center who they took with a 20th overall pick. It's a little bit ironic. Lee's right that a lot of great centers have been taken later. There's also a lot of guys that have been taken in the first round as well. There was a really neat study that I read on first round picks and their success rate as far as amount of Pro Bowls they've made at each position. And the overwhelming result was that you don't need to take a running back early just based on production. Center actually fared, an interior line fared pretty well as far as, yeah, you know what? A very high percentage of centers and offensive guards that are elite are taken in the first round versus other positions. So, I mean, it's a great debate as far as what you value, what you want, who else you have on your offensive line, who your O-line coaches are, who your quarterback is, how quickly he gets rid of the ball. But, you know, there's a lot of good centers out, great centers out there that were taken late. You mentioned the Eagles too, Ira. Jason Kelce was taken sixth round. But there's also, of course, the Chiefs are rolling with their second round pick of a center and winning Super Bowls. Right. So it's a good debate.
What round was the great Ryan Jensen draft? Fifth?
I believe sixth round. But he also took like 5 years to develop.
Sure, but still.
Yeah. Well, didn't he? I think at the end of the day, Steve, I think Bowles is going to prevail on this, and Bowles will get his way. Bowles wants beef up front. He's not going to demand that Light drafts one in the first round or moves up to get one. He's not going to do that. But he's going to make it clear. And Light's pretty, you know, good about responding to a coach's desires. It's the strength of Light's. And he's not going to treat Bowles any differently. And the Glazers, I think the Glazers are on Bowles' side on this from what I can determine. They see a pressing need up front. I don't know how Light's going to do it, but you're going to see some new bodies up front, and I think the results are going to be a better ground game for the Bucs.
Now, you're not suggesting they're going to give up on Cody Mauch so quick, are you?
No, not necessarily. No. I think he was okay. Plenty of room to grow. He showed enough, Lee. Left guard's a problem. In my opinion, center's a problem. You seem to, you're pretty good at defending Haynes, Lee. You're strong on...
I'm not defending him because I think he's Dermoni Dawson. I'm a broken record about it because I saw it with my own eyes. I've seen holes there. And for whatever reason, you know, Jim Brown, otherwise known as Rashad White, didn't run to the holes. He ran into people. He had zero vision. I can't kill Robert Haynes when I see holes out there. I mean, he did his job. What am I supposed to do? You SOB, you had a 3-yard hole wide open. You know, that blankety blank white didn't run there. It's your fault. I'm going to take a baseball bat to your ass. I can't do that. It's unreasonable. It's irresponsible. And from what I can tell, just going by data, he's a pretty damn good pass blocker. He's not Ryan Jensen. He's not Garrett Gilkey. He's somewhere in between. I think he's serviceable. I don't think the problem is Haynesy. The problem is Rashad White. When your running back can't read freaking holes that are there that a blind person in Schenectady can see, that's not the offensive lineman's problem. That's the running back's problem. And, in fact, that's the running back coach's problem because he's obviously not teaching them how to read the asses of the offensive lineman. And for those who don't know, the fundamental way of reading a block, you read the offensive line's ass. Wherever the ass is pointing, that's where you run. Real simple.
It's kind of like Ira when he watches people hitting the coconut shrimp at Golden Corral.
Steve, we're going to be back with another podcast right around the corner, baby.
Sage, I'm so glad that you entertained us with some of these thoughts. It's important to take a little time to think about what the Bucks are actually thinking.
That's right.
You know, to try to put the pieces of the puzzle together before we just decide, you know what, it's May and let's just deal with what we got and away we go from there. And we're hoping to tackle the Sage on Wednesday night to get another podcast in. A little fun fact, Ira, just a fun fact. The 49ers, do you consider them a physical offensive front, Ira?
Yes.
All right. A Super Bowl caliber pounding squad there?
They got a heck of a running back and a heck of a running game. I'll say that.
Okay. So their starting center, do you know who that is?
No, but you're going to tell me.
I'm going to tell you that is undrafted Jake Brendel is their starting center. So they roll with an undrafted guy, a veteran there center. So, you know, it is an interesting position, and you just want to be successful, but you want to be smart with it too. And I think there might be a little ego with Jason Light involved. You know, maybe he doesn't want to pick a center in the first round because he doesn't think he has to. And I think one crazy X factor, I hope they don't do it, but we did hear, like we heard with Ali Marpet, that Mauch could play center.
I got to get a Pepto abysmal now. Hey,
I didn't say it. Ira, this podcast has been about what goes on at $1. But all right, Sage, we're going to get you out of here. Thank you. Florida's Elite Restoration, floridaselite-restoration.com. Get there like we implored you earlier, floridaselite-restoration.com. And thanks to Bill Curry Ford, who supports all of Ira's work at joebucksfan.com, billcurryford.com. And check out the Best in Class podcast, Running Backs Breakdown. It's right there at joebucksfan.com. You'll enjoy it. Lee, Ira, you got a word to say goodbye?
You said it all with Cody Mauch. You said it all, Steve.
Triggered. He's triggered.
Aren't they finished with people changing positions over there at $1? Aren't they tired of it? I mean, come on.
I think, and to a lesser degree, this could be an NFL philosophy, but didn't Cutter used to talk about this often, and I think Light agreed with him that offensive linemen nowadays, you want them to be quote-unquote versatile. You want them to be plug and play, which is really not, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think that's good. But at least for offensive linemen, it's not good. But isn't that, haven't the Bucs kind of been on that bandwagon for a few years?
Yes, and it doesn't hurt to train a cross-train a guy, but...
Cross-train, that's the term I was looking
for. Leave Mauch where he is, Steve, and leave the Kemper where he is. Both things are in play.
I'm good with that, Ira. All right, be good, Sage. We'll talk to you soon.